Well, I guess all of that talking about who Adam knew and who Noah knew and all the rest has made people up. I don't know where they are. They got confused like last week. You think that was what that was all about? I hope it wasn't. I just thought it was a great study, and it's so funny. You know, it starts raining, and have you ever noticed that 5 drops of rain can keep 100 people from coming to church? And I've just observed that over the years, you know. I've got a friend used to collect excuses why people didn't come to church. A preaching friend, and he says, "Why are you not coming to church?" He says, "Because of the rain." And he says, "It's not raining." And you do have windshield wipers, you know. It's not raining, but it always might. So if you want an excuse, you know, then you can think up one, right? What was it, Mark Twain? Somebody said, "I need to borrow your axe." And his reply was, "No, I need it to eat my soup." And somebody said, "To eat your soup?" Said, "One excuse is as good as another." So that's pretty good. All right, let's get started here. I regret, you know, that everybody is not here, because this next 5 minutes will be some of the most interesting part of what we've done, and we're only going to spend a few minutes there looking at it. But I asked last week, how many of you have been to where Noah's Ark is? And that one is up in Kentucky. If you're ever headed in that direction, I urge you to stop and look at it. I don't care what it cost. It was relatively cheap, but Judy and I went there the second week after it opened everything. It was still not even finished and everything, but I suspect it would be $25 or $30. Anybody know that's been there? I suspect that's what it is. It will change your mind. Here is a plaque that you look at as somewhere in the ark. It took me a while to see the snake. Did you see the snake when you first looked up there, or you saw the serpent? I'm confident that's not what the serpent in the Bible looks like. But here is why this story about the ark is so important. The devil has said, "If I can convince you the flood was not real, then I can convince you that heaven and hell are not real." Isn't that amazing? Think of how people really, really struggle to believe in a universal flood and everything that's involved in it. Now, if you believe the Bible, it's not that hard to say, yeah, that's exactly what happened. What I want to show in the next 5 minutes is, it may take a little bit longer than 5 minutes, are photos that Judy and I made when we went to see the ark. You park in a parking lot, and then you ride a bus over to where the ark is, and the next slide is the slide of the bus as it's leaving, and that's the first view you have of it. I think those banners there, those ribbons there, must be banners in the tree. I had not even noticed them until I was putting all of this together. I thought, what on earth are those banners? But evidently, it's just some sort of things they put up in the trees, and I have no idea why or anything. But can you see the ark? And you're amazed when you look at it. Well, how big is it? Well, look at the next slide. Can you see the size of that ark? You can. You may see some people that are over on the left side of the screen as they're walking up. Can you see anybody in a red shirt way, way back in there? You've marked, you see inside that circle, you know who that is? That's me. Do you want to see how big the ark is? I mean, when you get off the bus, my, this thing is humongous. But man, when you get up to it, it is astounding, the size of the ark. My whole view of the flood really, really changed tremendously. Now, how long was the ark? How many cubits long? Anybody remember? If I say it's somewhere between 299 and 301, could you guess? Okay. It's 300. How long is a cubit? It's that long, 18 inches. Sometimes you'll see it measured 21 inches. But if it's 18 inches, that's a foot and a half. 18 inches, a foot and a half times 300 is 450 feet long. Whenever you stand there and see the ark, that was 300 cubits long, you know, and 50 cubits wide, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet tall. You know, I mean, that's you know, if a person is 5 feet tall and I'm a little bit above that, you could stand me up 9 times and I still wouldn't be able to look over the top of the ark. That's how big that place is. Now, when you get into the ark, so much of it is not developed. They've left some of it, Justin. They've left so much of that undeveloped. But you want to know what a 15-foot ceiling looks like? I mean, when you walk in there, it is just, you feel like you're almost here in the auditorium. Now, I know we're 30 feet high in the center part of the auditorium. But, you know, you look over here to the edge, I think those lights over there, those are they about 10 feet above or something like that? They may be, I think they're about 10 feet. There's a 7-foot door, so they may be 11 feet. But you can imagine 15 feet, and so much of it is undeveloped. And this is a picture of, you see anybody in a red shirt in that one? Is that humongous? When we got inside the ark, I never began to dream how big the thing was. Now then, in that, they have some displays. They have got one display that I think is rather interesting, and that is what was involved in the covering of the ark. And I made this photo of something they had hanging on the wall to show how it might have been possible to get sunlight all the way through the ark. And I doubt, you know, I don't think this violates how the Bible describes the ark. It violates the way we sometimes think about it. But Noah removed the covering from the ark. You remember that? After he flooded, after he landed on the mountain, he removed the covering from the ark. And that's just one of the ideas. And then you've got a whole section there talking about how on earth would you get rid of all the animal waste? How would you flush out a year's worth of droppings of one of every kind, or pardon me, two of every kind, or seven pairs of every kind of the animals that are on this earth? How would you have ever gotten there? How would you have gotten water to them? You ever think about that? I never thought about that till I got in the ark. And in another section, they've got watering troughs to show how they could get water. Well, where would you get the water? Well, first of all, there's a little bit outside, you know. There's a little bit of water outside, and there's one section there, and I wish I had photographed that section, that said if they got 1 inch of rain on as wide as the ark was, it would provide, 1 inch of rain would have provided enough water for the people and the animals inside the ark for 1 year. I mean, they've done the footage, they've done the mathematics, they've done the footage, and they've done the mathematics, and that is interesting. Here's an interesting concept. Nothing at all in the Bible about this. Ever thought about Noah carrying his library into the ark? Isn't that amazing? That's Noah's library. Not mentioned in the Bible. But if you'd been Noah and knew that civilization was about to be destroyed, why would you not have taken family photographs? You understand what I mean? Why would you not have taken the writings that you had and the things that you had? They talked about the fact that Noah was in the ark for more than a year, and he could have had a vegetable garden. And in another place, they've just got a little place showing where if you're in there for a year, you might could have raised, I'm telling you, it will blow your mind. I don't have any idea at all, but the very possibility he could have done it in relationship to that. And then there is the matter of storing food. And so you go in one of these sections where you've got 15 feet high and 75 feet wide. You know how far 75 feet is? From the back of the doors all the way to this screen. Buzz, is it 68 feet? There, Buzz is over here. Are we 68 feet between the camera and up here, something like that? Something like that. So that's how wide the ark was, and they could have stored food in there. And they've got them obviously in some kind of bags. We don't know how they kept food or anything. And then there are all the cages that are in there. And so you've got the cages where you could keep the smaller animals and everything. You get inside the ark, you've got so many cubit feet of space and everything. And to utilize that, they've got a whole section where they've got cages, and those little clay orange containers that you look like were a part of the watering system where they could just put, think of the task of providing water for one day for all of the animals. I never thought about that until you began looking at it. And then there's another section. You can see the cages, and you can then see evidently that is some food stored over there. And there are walkways inside the ark to keep you from, getting outside the boundaries. And they wanted in the ark to put live animals. That was sort of their original plan, like a petting zoo. But they do have cages that they have animals, like the animals Noah had in the ark. Look at this slide, and then look at the next slide, and you'll see the kind of animals we're talking about. Recognize either one of those. Flip back to the first slide, if you would, Ivan, just to see. I'm sorry the lighting was not in it. That's the best I could do with the lighting they had. They looked like dinosaurs. Yeah. Why? Because there were dinosaurs when people were on the earth. And that's another whole study, but that's why we have creationists to come down to show the absolute truthfulness of the Bible. And so, but you can look. Go back to the other slide. Look at the size of that animal, and look how tall the walls are and everything. It was a mind bending experience for me. Never had I thought about any of that. There's another whole section that talks about the ice age and how that might have fit. I mean, you can spend. You can spend 2 hours walking through it if you just sort of walk through it and don't read any of the placards. Or you could say, yes, Mick. No, the Bible does not mention it. Sure. That's right. That's right. Yeah. You can solve it any way you want to. Does that make sense? It could have been hibernation. He could have put every one of those animals in hibernation for a year's time. The Bible doesn't, and so I'm content to say, I don't know. And I may be wrong. Is food mentioned? Somebody look in Genesis 6 and everything. I don't know if food is mentioned. If you've got a concordance, that'd be the quickest way to look it up. You just Google and use one of your Bible programs. Grant, you have a Bible program on your iPad or on your whatever you're looking at. See if food is mentioned there in Genesis. I don't know whether it is or not. I had thought about that hibernation also, but then you begin thinking about, imagine how busy Noah and his family were. There are sections in there. He's got a carpenter shop. Why would you have a carpenter shop? Because in a year's time, those doors are going to break. You understand what I'm saying? There's got to be there's a section where he's doing some metalworking and everything. And then there's a section that shows, and if you're an engineer, you'd find this interesting. How on earth do you get timbers that size up that high? You understand? When you saw that first picture of the ark from the bus and everything, it sort of, yes. And so it does mention food. 621. All right, so there was food in the ark for the animals. But how on earth would you get all of that? I mean, just the engineering part of it. It is 75 feet up in the air. How on earth do you get these big timbers while you're building the ark? How do you get all that put together? And he talks about, he shows how they could have, used pulleys and that type of thing.
And I don't know. I just never even thought about it. Since then, you know how we use elephants sometimes to move large weights and everything? You remember when the circus used to come to town and they'd bring the elephants down to Palm Beach Lakes Boulevard? Anybody old enough here to remember that from the past? And Trudy raises her hand. She remembers that. And those elephants would help put up the big top whenever, when they had a big top, put up whatever tents they had for them. How'd you like to use dinosaurs to do that? I'd never thought about that until just one day, all of a sudden, it just popped in my head and everything. If you use elephants, why could you not use dinosaurs to do that type of thing? And that's not a part of other than that, those animals that are there, that's not necessarily a part of it. Dave Holliday, you had some comments. Speak loud, Dave, so I can hear. That's right. And that's right. Almighty. Isn't it amazing? Could we spend about an hour speculating about all of this? And when we got through, guess what we'd have? An hour of speculation. And my God is big enough to handle it, okay? I mean, he had all of this worked out. But you begin thinking about the magnitude of the work of Noah building the ark and gathering the food and getting all of that. Has anybody moved recently from one place to another? You know how difficult it is to move one house full of stuff from one place to another and get it all in there in the proper place? You understand what I'm talking about? Can you imagine loading up the ark and everything that's involved in it? But I find that interesting, and seriously, I would encourage you, it's over on the, I guess it's Eastern Kentucky, over around Lexington. I don't know, is that Eastern Kentucky or not? It's sort of Central Kentucky. It's around Lexington, south of Lexington, out in a, there's nothing there except Noah's Ark, but it has changed a lot and everything once that has been built there. It's rather interesting. He brought timber from all over the world, and some of you will find this interesting. He brought timber from New Zealand to put inside when they built the ark, even brought timber from New Zealand to use in building the ark. All of it did not come from New Zealand, but I just thought it was interesting to create a worldwide interest in that. And in case you're interested, the All Blacks rugby team beat the American team 104-14 in football on yesterday. So I just throw that in just in passing in case you're sitting there worrying if New Zealand rugby is still what it was. The score was 53-0 at halftime. So interesting thing. Let's get back to where we ought to be. Here's review. Don't want to review it much. Just to remind us of the number of years. The genealogy from Adam to Noah shows that there was the time from the creation of Adam. Adam lived 930 years. Now whenever Adam is 130 years, he has a son. And so now then, you've got the genealogy, and you can just add up all the numbers. Adam, Seth, Enosh, Cainah, and you just keep adding all of those up. And when you get to the 600th year of the life of Noah, you've got the flood coming. And so you'd mark it down. When from the time of Adam's birthday, and put that word birth in quotes, but from the time of Adam's birthday until Noah went in the ark is 1,656 years. And what this chart, and I know you found this fascinating. I was amazed how many of you were fascinated by this chart, and I passed them out last week. And if you were not here, let me know, and I'll try to print a few more so you can have access to these. You just look at this. Look how long the life of Adam extends. And then this slide said, who could Noah have known? And so we looked at all of these individually and added one son year by year by year by year. Those numbers in the orange or with the orange background across the top, that's the age of Adam when each of these sons are born. And so if you look across the top, you see those vertical lines, little numbers. You cannot read the numbers likely, but that's how old Adam was when all of this happened. And so that's pretty close to accurate on the graph. 900, he lived 930 years. Now then, You begin looking at this, and down here, here's Noah. Could Noah have known Adam? No. Why? Adam's life ends before Noah comes on the scene. What about Noah's father? Isn't that remarkable? That Adam could have known Noah's, Noah's father could have known Adam for a short portion of his life. And then what about Methuselah? Look at how far the life of Methuselah, how long Methuselah knew Adam. And then you just look all the way up, and with the exception of Enoch, whom the Lord took at 365, you begin to look, and you can see that Lamech could have known Seth, and he could have known Enosh. He could have known Jared for 500 years of Jared's life. 500 years of Lamech's life, he could have known Jared. I find this graph to be so overwhelming, helping me grasp some things I had never, ever grasped. And it's changed my view of the patriarchal age. We used to talk about he spoke to the fathers, and so in my kindergarten mind, God came to every household, and God spoke, said something to the father, and you offer these sacrifices and things of this nature. But you do have prophets. There are prophets during this period of time. That doesn't fit our view of the patriarchal age where God spoke to the fathers, does it? Enoch was a prophet. Noah was a prophet, a preacher of righteousness with an inspired message from God. What about Melchizedek? You know, he's a priest. What about Moses' father-in-law? Who's that? Jethro. He was a priest. Isn't that amazing? That doesn't fit patriarchal age in the way that we have thought about it. You know, you begin looking at it, and I've had to just sort of back off and think. I used to know more about this than I currently know. Does that make sense? God handled it, and Dave, you're just right. God solved it so everybody had a chance to know that God existed. And you could know that God existed by the very creation of the world. And that is a part of that. I don't want to spend, I think that's all I want to spend at that. Let's get to the Tower of Babel. Let's get to Genesis chapter 11. You open up your Bibles, and the flood goes from Genesis chapter 6, and when you get to the end of chapter 9, you arrive at a turning point. And then chapter 10, because look at how chapter 9 ends. And all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. Wait a minute. How old was Noah when the flood came? 600. How long did he live after the flood? Who could have known Noah? Shem's life is shortened. The days of Shem were 600 years. Shem lived 500 years after the flood came. I mean, he was still alive 500 years after the flood came. That remarkable? That's a concept that we do not have. And we're going to look at that. I want you to look at Genesis chapter 10, verse 1. I said chapter 11, but look at chapter 10, verse 1. These are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And unto them sons were born after the flood. And then you have the listing of Shem's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then you've got the listing all the way down. And we get to the last verse of chapter 10. These are the families of the sons of Noah after their generations in their nations. And by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood. Now we know more about that than what's stated, do we not? But when you get to chapter 10, and we spent some time looking at that last week, talk about some of the races and everything. Look at verse 5 in reference to the descendants of Japheth and his descendants and sons and grandsons. By these were the islands of the Gentiles divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families in their nations. Guess what? There was only one language spoken. It was obviously King James English, right? I mean, you have figured that out, that when God said, let there be light, he does that with a British accent. You understand that, no. What's that language? I don't know. Have no idea what that language was. But now all of a sudden, you get to chapter 10. And you arrive at the statements that these were done according to their nations by their languages. I thought that might have been mentioned three times. We've looked at two of the places. The other place may be verse 31. These are the sons of Shem after their families, after their tongues, in their land, after their nation. So there's the languages mentioned again. Now, we are about, when we get to chapter 11, about to discover where all the nations came from. Mentioned one other thing, and that is the word Shem. The Semitic people, that word used to refer to the Jewish nation, has reference to the fact they are descendants of Shem. So in the genealogy of Jesus, Jesus does not come through Japheth. You know, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. He does not come through Ham. But all of these other nations do. And now, for the first time, when you get to Genesis chapter 10, you begin reading about the nations. And so whenever they were divided by their languages, that allowed them as a unit to move outside of the ark and travel to all of these places. Now then, the point on the slide is the Tower of Babel divided people into nations. Okay? Look in chapter 11. That's where the Tower of Babel is. And the Bible says in chapter 11, and the whole earth was of one language and of one speech, as they journeyed from the east. As they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they made bricks for, they had brick for stones and slime for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build a city and a tower. And look at the description of that, whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make a name, lest we be scattered upon the face of the whole earth. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Tower of Babel. I'm not sure exactly that expression from the east. I know where the plains of Shinar are geographically. I know where Babel is located because there is another nation that sounds like Babel, and we know exactly where that nation was. What Old Testament nation is there that sort of sounds like Babel? Babylon. So if you go to Babylon and you look back toward the east, that's sort of where the ark must have landed. They came out of the ark And they came from the east, and they came to Babel. And they said, let's make a great, great foundation here. Now then, consider this as you think about the Tower of Babel. God commanded before that tower was ever built, and I've put this verse on the screen there, chapter 9, verse 1. I thought that was 9:4. 9:1. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. What does that mean? You go out and have children and repopulate this earth. Folks, that's why Genesis 10 is there. It's to help us to see, as there was a destruction of all mankind except for the 8 souls that came out of the ark. As you began with 2 individuals, Adam and Eve, when they leave the garden, and there's Cain and Abel and Seth, you've got those 3 we know by name. They went out and replenished the earth. Look back in Genesis chapter 5. Genesis chapter 5 says, this is the book of the generation of Adam. For in the day that God created man, in the likeness of God made he him. Male and female created in them and blessed them and called their name Adam in the day that they were created. First of all, they were created on the same day. That's interesting. And their name was Adam. We pointed that out when we looked at this before, that the word Adam just means mankind. And so the later translation, sometimes he called him mankind. I think the New King James says that. The King James says, and he called him Adam. Why? If you're going to say the word mankind, that's what Adam is. He's mankind. And so he got the name of what he was. You ever known anybody to name their dog? I don't know if you've ever known anybody. You know anybody to ever name their child boy? Huh? I've known a person in New Zealand. I knew a person in Florida whose middle name was Boy. That's the name they gave to him. And did not your father say, boy, come here, right? For just, you know, ever say that to you? Well, if you were a girl, not likely, but you understand what I'm saying. And so he was called mankind. And the best I can figure it out, and I said this before, Eve's name must have been Eve Adam, and Adam's name was Adam. And so you can file that away and then wipe it out of your memory forever. And so he lived 130 years and begat a son after his likeness and called his name Seth. And the days of Adam after he begat Seth were 800 years, and he begat sons and daughters. Look in reference to Seth, verse 7. And he begat sons and daughters. Verse 10, Enos begat sons and daughters. Verse 11, begat sons and daughters. Got the picture? They're repopulating the earth. Or they're populating the earth. That's what God told them to do. And now the thing is, they just have one speech. And so they come to this place, and before they ever built the tower, as they come out of the ark, God says to Noah, and thereby to Noah and his descendants, go out and repopulate the earth. The tower was not built to reach God's heaven. I remember my brilliant scholarship when I'm in Sunday school up and down the hallways at West Huntsville. We didn't have hallways, had 2 classrooms. Ansel said we had 4, I only remember 2. And they were just little sections in the corner that were, and when it was time to have your Sunday school class, I remember when they didn't even have walls there. And if you got bored listening to what was going on in your class, you could listen to what was going on in another class. I don't know if you've ever been in that kind of a situation or not, But, I was taught the Tower of Babel, either I was taught it or my imagination just took it and ran with it. And I was convinced that God was afraid they were going to get all the way to heaven. You know? I don't know if you had the same theological problem that I had, but as I was learning about the story of Babel, I learned about Jack and the Beanstalk. I just sort of mixed those two together. If I'd been preaching when I was 5 or 6 years of age, I would think, God was worried up in heaven because they were going to build a tower to get up in heaven, and they were going to steal the goose that laid the golden egg. You understand? That's not what this is all about. Physically, it would be impossible to have enough material to build a tower that reaches even here to the moon in all likelihood. And for sure, to the heaven of heavens. God was not concerned. And so when they said, let the top of it go up unto the heavens, you sort of write that on a 3x5 card and put it in the back of your head. You know, I know why. What's going on here? Look in the book of Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy chapter 1, when the Jews are giving their reasons why they're not able to go into the promised land, chapter 1, verse 28, and they are trying to decide, they've sent the spies out. You remember there are giants in the land. You remember the evil report that came back. But look, this is interesting. Verse 28, whither shall we go up? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts, saying, the people's greater and taller than we. The cities are great and walled up to heaven. I've got the old King James I'm reading from. How far did those walls in those cities go? They went up to heaven. That's what it says. Let us build a tower that'll go up to heaven. Now, if I just be a Bible student, you know where the birds fly, Genesis chapter 1? The birds say they fly in the heavens. And then God placed the sun and the moon and the stars. Where did he place them? In the heavens. Did he put them where the birds fly? Well, not exactly. And so the Jews' mind was three heavens. The atmospheric heaven, the space heaven, and the heaven of heavens. And so Paul says, I know a man who was taken up to the third heaven. He's using Jewish terminology that everybody would be able to understand. And so when they were trying to build a tower up to heaven, that is not what they were trying to do. Why did God confound their language? First of all, they have one heart and one mind, and whatever they set to their mind to do, they'll be able to do. Anybody remember a president that said, in this decade, we're going to let man walk on the moon? And everybody thought, he's got to be insane. And in 1969, man walked on the moon because America became of one heart and one mind. Whatever they put their mind to do, they'll be able to do it. That's an amazing concept of the power that God has given us in our brains. We don't stretch our brains enough. So here they are building this. The reason they built the tower was to keep from being scattered. Here's Genesis 11:14. They said, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in heaven. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad the earth. Abroad over the earth. Why did they build the tower? Why did God confound their language? Chapter 10 tells you, so they would do what God said, and that is go out and replenish the earth. And that's about all we're going to say about Babel. I mean, there's a lot more that we could say, but we've got to get halfway through the book of Genesis, and we're 80% through the number of classes that we have left. We've got to get to Abraham. Throw up that next slide, if you would, if it's available, and that is the slide that you're interested in seeing, and that's only to whet your appetite. Look down, you see the life of Noah, 350 years. You see the life of Shem for 500 years. Look who's at the bottom of that. Can you read the name of the persons at the bottom? If you draw a line from his life straight up, how far up can you get? Who could Abraham have known on that list? Does that blow your mind? Abraham could have known Noah. Okay, that's where we start next week. I hope you'll be here whenever we start next week. That's that. I'll get that chart and get it printed also. Okay, I will get that chart printed. But this is interesting. You want to put Isaac on that chart? Will Isaac fit on that chart? All right, that's it. See you next week.